It's time for Firearm Friday, a podcast dedicated to bringing together the firearm industry and community. Now here's your host, from the great state of Texas, the tactical leprechaun himself, Chris Dover.
Welcome to Firearm Friday. I'm your host, Chris Dover, and this week we're going to be having a conversation with IWI team member and shooting sports competitor Adam Litke. But first, I want to take a moment and tell you about High Caliber Targets. Not all AR-500 targets are created equal. With High Caliber Targets, you get a better grade of steel and multiple styles to choose from. They even custom cut steel targets and mounts to your specifications. If you like the ring of lead on steel, check them out over on facebook.com/calibertarget. Again, that is facebook.com/calibertarget. Our crew helped me welcome Adam to the show this week. How are you, bro?
How you doing? I'm good.
Long time no see.
Yeah, a couple days.
Right. So it was good. It was good to hang out with you over on Hank Strange's chat that night. And appreciate you joining us here for a little one-on-one time. That was Hank's show's one of those weird ones, right? I mean, you can go down a bunch of rabbit holes and you never know.
It turns into a lot of weird conversations.
you never know with him what's going to happen. So today's going to be all about Adam. So
yes.
For those that don't know, Adam is a shooting sports competitor with IWI and a ton of other companies and sponsors and that sort of stuff. And we're certainly going to get into that and talk about all that stuff. I am curious. I mean, with everything going on, I mean, for reference, if you're watching this, listening to this, whatever, 10 years down the road, God bless you for that. But yeah, we're in May 2020. So look up a calendar in a history book and figure it out. I'm not going to talk about it, but with everything going on, Adam, how's that affected training regimen and competitions and stuff like that?
Yeah, so it's definitely played havoc with it. You know, usually when you have a shooting competition, you've got anywhere between a local one of 50 guys to bigger ones of 300 to 400 people. And obviously most states are doing the maximum of 10 people right now during this COVID-19 outbreak. And so we have a lot of that. A lot of matches have been canceled. Usually by now with local and major matches, we just shot 15 to 20 matches. And I think last weekend was three. So it's significantly decreased. People are trying to figure out how to live in this new kind of crazy world we're living in. And we really just started last weekend with the matches back up. We had a match last weekend, and we have two matches upcoming this weekend, and then the kind of majors start back up, which is going to be awesome because most of us all know each other. We're excited to hang out with each other, talk families and shop and stuff like that. So it's going to be good to get back in the groove of things.
Right. Now you're up in Ohio, correct?
I am. I'm up in the cold state of Ohio where it either snows or rains or, I don't know, tornadoes, I guess, are next, or murder hornets, whatever they're calling them. You know, we just never know up here in Ohio. It's been raining for a couple of days. It froze a couple of days, and then it was 70 degrees out. So,
right. Now, how far away from Ohio do you have to travel for some of these matches?
The farthest one that we've done where we didn't fly was Missouri. That was about 12 and a half hours each way. My buddy, who I usually go with, hates driving, so I drove most of the way. And we learned I need somebody else who's going to help drive if we're going to drive 12 and a half hours each way. But also, we've gone as far as Las Vegas for the Red October match, which if no one's ever heard of, it's like an AK-style match. I shoot my IWI Galil. It is hands down one of the best matches AK-wise, and I would definitely have you look up that one if you're in the Vegas area if you want to travel.
Well, very cool. So with I'm assuming with flight, you go pretty much all over the place then if you're going to fly, right?
Yeah, anywhere from Florida to the Outer Banks, you know, in South North Carolina to Vegas to Wisconsin, all over the place, yeah.
Cool. And with traveling and, the firearms you use for competition and stuff like that, the ammunition and the other, what kind of a hassle is all that?
The guns are annoying just because you bring two or three guns and it does add up to weight, and they've got that 50-pound rule. And, you know, you start putting some stuff in a box, and it ain't hard to hit 50 pounds, especially when the box can weigh 10 pounds itself, the gun case. Ammo, with this new world we're going through, I don't know what I'm going to do. Before, it was cheaper just to buy it and have it shipped for free because all these companies were shipping for free. And so I just have it shipped to the match, and I'd pick it up. with prices nowadays, I might have to look into actually shipping ammo down, which I'm not looking forward to.
Yeah, that could suck, man. Yeah, especially about how many rounds do you go through total in a match?
Yeah, depending on the match size, if it's a pistol caliber carbine or PCC match, you might only need like 300 to 500 rounds of pistol ammo. But if it's a true three gun match, you might be looking at 300 to 500 rounds of rifle and 200 to 300 or more rounds of rifle. And you got shotgun slugs and shotgun birdshot. And the poundage adds up real quick.
Yeah, no doubt it does, man. And I don't know what you're talking about, UPS. All that's got to go ground too.
Right.
If I'm correct on ammunition. So that affects it too. And then there's a weight limit. And then so you potentially have to send multiple packages, I guess.
Yep. It starts getting real annoying real fast.
What a headache. And I can imagine, I mean, not, you know, ammunition and just ammunition and firearms aside, we're talking about even your other gear. That's a lot of stuff to have to pack up. And so when you're talking about your ear pro and, you know, cleaning supplies and other things, if you know, that you need.
Yeah. When you start talking about, you know, when you think about the stupid stuff like cleats and you need shooting pants, you need gloves potentially and slings and stuff like that. And then magazines. And then you got to think, all right, you know, if I'm traveling and I'm not flying, how, you know, am I going through a state that doesn't allow that, you know, and what if we do get stopped and what are their rules? And 'cause Illinois is right next to us and New York's on the other side, you know, within a state each. So you start thinking about that stuff and going, all right, so now we have to plan our trip where we go straight down, we cock out of this way, then we go down, then we cock out this way, and then we scoot across the bottom of the state.
Right.
So there's a bunch of weird stuff you start thinking about when you start shooting and going, huh, okay, how are we going to do this? You know, how are we going to ship all this? Right. And then flying back with it. You know, a lot of times you're catching red-eye flights and stuff. The airport staff aren't too happy sometimes to deal with guns. Other ones don't really care. Some of them don't know. Some freak out. It's funny every time. You never know what you're going to get.
Sure. Now with you, you've got a day job, a regular job. We won't go into that unless of course you want to. But so with having that regular job and then these, Matt, you're talking about two, you know, in a weekend, and you're talking about obviously you got to have training time and trigger time and that sort of stuff. How do you balance? Get all that balanced out?
Yeah, it's hard. It seemed like before I used to do training for CCW and other stuff, teach it and things like that. And that seemed like it took up a lot of time. And I thought, oh, heck, I'll do competition too. And then competition kind of took over and it is tough. I got two young kids and it's, you know, you kind of get home as soon as you can. You do dinner and stuff like that. And then you figure out which weekends you can do stuff with. The only perk of living in Ohio is it snows 5 to 6 months a year. And there's not too many matches during that time. So you cram all in the summer. And you got, you know, winter to decompress and stuff. But it is hard, and it's why you see a lot of the same shooters, a lot of the same places, because they've kind of mastered it. And as the new ones come in, you kind of meet them, and we all share tips on how did you get the family time? How did you balance that? How did you do this? And most of us have pretty demanding jobs, so we're always, you know, doing that as well. You know, I'm a finance and HR director in my real life, and, you know, those are kind of 24-hour jobs, so we kind of figure that out as well. But God bless my wife. She takes care of the kids when I'm gone and doesn't burn the house down. So it's, you know, it's just a balancing act.
Right. Now, does your regular job know that you do the shooting competitions?
Yeah, it's funny. I work with mostly what most people consider mostly liberals. And most of them think I'm the devil incarnate when it comes to gun stuff. But, you know, I've had a couple take me up on offers to teach them for their CCW class. I've had other ones ask me to take them out to show them things. And I've done that. And it's kind of been a blessing to, you know, get to expose people to different things and let them see things. And they've always had fun doing it. But I think also it helps just to, you know, they look at the finance guy and like, he's a finance guy, you know, and it's like, he can't be that crazy because he's a finance guy. So it kind of helps me, you know, maybe put him at ease a little bit.
Yeah. Well, it all comes down to normalizing, you know, firearm ownership, you know, and that's the thing, you know, I think as you see that, you know, people from all walks of life, right. It's not just, you know, they think the toothless tactical beard, redneck, you know, backwoods hillbilly, you know, Trump hat wearing, whatever, you know, whatever stereotype you want to stick on that. And they seem to take firearms and those stereotypes and mash them together. And so I think when you really get down to it and, you know, we're able to, And some places, unfortunately, aren't able to do like what you're talking about. They can't come out. I hate to use the right term come out, but I mean, they can't come out in the workplace or even in their community about it. And I think it's unfortunate because it's nice when we can show that type of diversity as a community.
Yeah, I agree. You definitely get that. I know guys who actually don't talk about it. I know some of the gals at our place that don't talk about it. Until, you know, maybe they ask you to go to lunch and they say, hey, you know, we're walking by outside and you chit chat and you're like, what, you know, you CCW or, you know, you do this, you do that. And, how most people found out I do this is actually YouTube. I really never said a whole lot. And I just had someone walk up one day, one of our county prosecutors, and he goes, hey, he goes, I think I saw you on YouTube for some company called Holosun. And I'm like, Holosun. They're like, yeah. And I'm like, was that you? I'm like, yeah, that was me, man. And they're like, no way. You know, I didn't know you got, you know, you did this and that. And they said, and then I see you on 15 other videos and you're doing podcasts with people. And so it's funny, you know, I think like you said, like normalizing, you know, people think of it as, you know, the old fat white guy or the hillbilly, you know, Bubba. And they don't think about, you know, when I've taught CCW class to hundreds of people, if not thousands, and the majority of them, probably 80%, were people you would never think would own a gun if you put that attribute set to them. You'd be like, oh, that's obviously a, you know, anti-gun person. But, you know, the people that wear suits and ties every day, there's people that wait at your tables, there's you know, your shrink, there's all kinds of stuff. You know, it's just crazy who does firearms things that you would just never know, because again, it's not something most of us talk about unless we're asked about it.
Right. And I think that that's not necessarily a bad thing, because I think that, you know, I think there's a certain section of our community that talks about it way too much. You know, you probably know some people like I'm talking about that they'll interject whatever the conversation is, they'll interject the Second Amendment firearms, something into it. Right.
Right. Yeah. What'd you have dinner last night? AK-47.
Right. Well, you know, we had some deer and, you know, shot that deer with the SKS and he was using the right. It's like, I just asked what you had for dinner, bro. That's I didn't want this conversation. We could go down that road. It's fine. But yeah, if you're talking to somebody middle of the road, that could be overwhelming and a little bit unusual for them. So, baby steps, let them get their feet wet a little bit first. I kind of like the mention it in passing, you know, at the water cooler at work, just little things. I kind of like that idea. And then if they want to know more, then be open to, of course, talking about it. I think that's a good approach. Now, as far as growing up and that sort of thing, were you into shooting sports and that sort of thing at an early age, or was this something that come on later in life?
It came on kind of later in life. You know, I grew up on a 200-acre farm here in Ohio. We grew up hunting and stuff, but we never, you know, my dad did 22 like rimfire competitions. Mm-hmm. We never really got to go to that stuff because it was after work and he worked about an hour away. So he'd do it, then he'd come home and, you know, we shot, for deer. We did things like that. Turkey hunting, grew up doing that stuff, shooting 22 at groundhogs, you know, pest animals on the farm. And, I got married. We moved out of the house. You know, we moved into our own place, obviously. And I thought, you know what? I need a handgun for protection. You never know what's going to happen. So bought a handgun. And then I was trying to look at where I get my CCW. Did that. And then I thought, you know, I'd like to get better at it, because all I've really done is stand behind a booth and shoot, or, you know, stand, you know, 20 feet away from a tree and shoot at the backstop, whatever. And so found out USPSA, which is like a handgun mostly type of thing. I started shooting that. And then that devolved into just a plethora of buying guns and ammo and gear and everything, and took training classes. And so it's just kind of evolved over the past 10 years or so. And I was fortunate to find three or four dudes in my area who are pretty good, and they like to travel and do this as well. And it's kind of like, you know, your lifting buddies. You know, if you go to the gym or you run or whatever, you do better when you have buddies who keep you accountable. Those are those guys where they've kept me accountable. We've kind of gotten to do a lot together. So we've really gotten to grow together, and that's been a lot of fun. So now I'm just excited to, you know, pretty shoot anything we can. We've done almost everything except for the old cowboy stuff. That's something I've really never tried.
Well, you got to get into that, man.
Right. That's my next venture. I got to start doing cowboy outlaw matches.
That's a fun one, man. it can be, with a lot of the dressing up and the almost cosplay that they do. Right. Yeah. The cowboy action stuff is pretty cool. Now, did you grow up and talk about the farm and all that? Was that in Ohio?
Yeah, it was actually about 30 minutes from where I'm sitting right now, where my wife and I live. We grew up, my parents still live on that farm. They still have Longhorn cattle and all kinds of stuff, and still take the kids out there and spend a lot of time out with them. And still near and dear to my heart, we have chickens in our house, which my kids love, but they'd love to have, they want goats and pigs next. And my wife's like, listen, she goes, we don't have enough acres to be a farm.
Right. Well, you know, but here's the question. I got a few questions about the chickens. We could certainly go down that road because I don't
know.
I've had chickens before. My wife, I don't know. Bless her heart. She lets me do 99.9% of anything and everything I want to do. Chickens are not one of them. but growing up, I had chickens and we had pigs too. So is that something that chickens for eggs or meat or just pets at this point for the kids, or what's the role?
We've been doing chickens now. We took a year break when I was working way too much and I wasn't around enough to take care of them, and the kids were a little bit too young. We've been doing those for about 3 or 4 years though, total. Mostly for eggs. We've talked about doing a turkey because when I grew up on the farm, we always raised our own turkey for Thanksgiving. We always butchered it together as a family. And so I want to do that. We've also talked about meat birds because the one thing I'm a big pro person of is letting the kids know that whatever you're eating comes from something, and something had to give up its life to feed you. And that way they kind of have a little more respect for, I don't just go to Walmart or Aldi's or wherever your grocery store is and pick it up and that's the end of it. That had to come from something. You know, we're kind of drawn away from that nowadays. But I want my kids, they're 5 and 9, give or take, to understand there is a difference there. And for you to have that, something else had to go away. And so we try to do that with our kids, even with eggs, telling them, you know, they consume the food, they lay the egg, and then we're grateful for them to do that for us. And then we take that and we eat that. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to do that. And we're also trying to raise chickens for the first time too with a rooster, you know, show the kids how the life cycle works, things like that. And this never ending cycle that kind of goes around.
And I think that's a beautiful thing. And it speaks a little bit to the appreciation of life, right? And a lot of people, you know, especially the anti-hunting, you know, hunting crowd out there, you know, they'll, you know, how, oh, you know, hunters are just brutal people. They'll go out and shoot anything or what. And they're certainly with pest animals or, you know, something like that, nuisance animals, if they're destroying crops or they're, I mean, you have to, you know, obviously after your chickens or something like that, you know, you got to do what you got to do. But yeah, I think that if you raise animals to eat or if you hunt, you know, I don't know. I just think it instills a value to life in general, not just, and it can translate over, I think, even into human life, but I think you're spot on with that.
Yeah, that's kind of what you said. That's kind of what we're going for with the kids is my wife wasn't raised on a farm, but she, you know, they had some understanding from gardening and stuff. And again, kind of what you said, to kind of human life is just making the kids, hopefully they understand in the long term of things that, A, it's good to be self-sustaining, but it's also good to understand that life is important at all levels, you know, from the smallest thing to the largest thing. Mm-hmm. And I think if more people understood that, we wouldn't have the problems we have in this world. But, you know, that's a podcast for another day, probably.
Right. Right. Now, as far as the type of chickens, what type of chickens do you have?
Yeah, we did 4 bantams this year, which are the small little micro guys. And then we also did, I think it's 11 of the long feathers, something like that. But we did 11 of those. Those are heavy layers, and the kids really fell in love with the bantams, which are the smaller ones. They don't get real big, but they're scrappy. So our kids saw those, and they thought, we need to have those. So for the first year ever, we're doing a real tiny chicken, and then we have our normal egg layers as well.
Right. That's awesome. Now, as far as jumping back to you growing up and being on the farm and being around firearms, in that area in Ohio at that particular point in time, what do you – remember, like, the sentiment around firearms? And if you do, was that, you know, how was that the same or different than nowadays?
Yeah, I think at least when I was growing up, I mean, I didn't know any better. I mean, I'll be honest with that. I just knew that, you know, we had a shotgun in the house, and we had a 22, and we had a 30-06 and 308, mostly hunting stuff. And that's kind of what we grew up with, was mostly hunting stuff. And my dad was an FFL. He liked relic guns as well. So he had some of those. But In the area, I think it was mostly hunting. And it's funny because now, at least when I grew up, I really wasn't a big fan of hunting guns. I mean, I had a 22, but I would rather have the polymer black looking stock, not the wood stock. As much as my dad hated me for that, you know, he's like, a good oak stock.
Right.
And I'm like, you know, the old timer. And now, you know, I mostly shoot ARs. I shoot bullpups, things like that. I still appreciate the, you know, what we got here with, you know, 1911s and other things and, you know, Woodstock guns and things like that. I got my dad finally. I built him an AR and you know, he gets to shoot his AR once in a while and he enjoys it. But it's definitely, I think it's definitely changed in terms of I see now a lot of, when I say younger, I'm going to say like 35 and below-ish, 40 and below. They're definitely into guns more than probably they were when I was younger. And then I see a lot of people at 45 and above. I see them getting into different levels of guns than what I remember as a kid. Like my dad and his buddies all like very much the same gun. It was all the same Woodstock 30-06 or 308 or things like that. And now I see a lot of even his friends shooting, you know, AR-15s and AK-47s and things like that. So it's interesting to see how the things have changed. I don't know if it's because they look cooler or if maybe they're like, you know, bigger magazine or I don't know. But it's funny to see the change even in people.
I think it's you know, that sort of stuff has it's obviously progressed over the years and become more mainstream. I mean, particularly in the more rural areas.
Yeah, and I think when you really think about that Clinton era kind of band, you know, we call it the Clinton era band, even though it wasn't a real band. I mean, that really didn't end that long ago. And when you really think about that, you know, it's when I was a kid. I mean, probably most of the time I was a kid, I was during that band. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was that huge stretch. And now you look at it and I mean, you can go to, you know, you go to Walmart not long ago and get an AR-15. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think some of that shift definitely changed things as well as online. I mean, really the internet hasn't been around that long when you really think of how it's used today. And now you can go online, have it shipped your FFL and you're ready to go. And, you know, what Palmetto State and all them having $500 ARs. You know, it's hard not to get in the AR game at $500. You know, it's like, why the heck not? I'll just try something out or, you know, some other company.
Right. Yeah. Now, jumping back to the shooting sports and shooting for these different companies, what was the pathway that led up to all of that?
Yeah. So it's kind of a funny pathway. And so I started shooting these things. I'd always wanted a bullpup, a Tavor is what they were called at the time, the SAR. I'd always wanted one of those, and ironically, it's how a lot of people got into guns. I played Modern Warfare and Call of Duty. They had the bullpup in there, and I'm like, what a cool thing, this tiny little gun that shoots just as far as the rest of them. That's awesome. And a couple of years later, the IWI introduced that to the U.S. market. I started shooting it, and about the same time I got into competitions, I was running that. And probably about a year and a half into competitions, one of the guys from IWI reached out to me. I was posting all my videos of shooting online on some of the IWI platform, like Facebook pages. And he goes, hey, just wanted to reach out to you. We appreciate you running our stuff. We'd like to send you a care package. And I'm like, who does that? And I'm like, at first I was like, who are you? I'm not giving you my address. You can come here and do your weird things to me. And so he gave me his name. I searched him on their webpage. And sure enough, he was on there as an employee. And he sent me some shirts and some stickers and some hats and things like that. And after that, I just said, hey, you know, I'm looking to get into shooting. He goes, yeah. He goes, reach out to us, you know, in a little bit. We're thinking about doing that. And right around that same time, I was shooting Holosun Optics, which were brand new. I bought like the first two or three of them off Primary Arms. Mm-hmm. And I figured, you know, they're just these cheap optics that I can throw on a bunch of guns. And, you know, if I get a year or two out of them, it'd be fine. And after about 2 years, it was still going strong. I was beating the crap out of it. And I reached out to them and said, hey, have you ever thought about having a competitive shooter shoot for you? And they said, you know what? We were just talking about it. Email this guy. So I emailed that guy. And next thing I know, he says, absolutely. What do you need? And he goes, and a week later goes, do you want to go to SHOT Show? And I'm like, this is how people get kidnapped, you know, free ammo on the side of a white van. They're like, hey, competitive shooters, you want to go to SHOT Show? Sure. I'll get in your white van with you and drive across the country.
All right.
Went to SHOT Show, met all the guys from Holosun, started shooting for them. Walked over to the IWI booth at lunch and they're like, oh yeah, we know you. We know you from your videos, whatever. Let's get you a gun so you can shoot some more competitions.
Wow.
with a backup gun. And it just kind of devolved after that of meeting people and finding like-minded people and people I trusted, gear I trusted. And it kind of went from there. And it's funny because most people always ask, how do you get sponsored? And I said, honestly, you just gotta shoot a bunch, you know, go out there and shoot. and be an honest person. Because all the industry, you probably know, the whole industry knows each other. It's, you know, most of the CEOs and most of the marketing directors, they all talk. They all know each other. They've worked at different companies, and they know when you're being dishonest, and they know when you're being a douche. And they'll call you out on it and be like, dude, the dude's blackballed. You can't touch that guy. And, you know, and so it's funny that it, it just went like that. Next thing I know, I talked to some guys at a holster company, A&R Design, and then it was Cleanse Oil and some other ones, and Victor's Legacy, the Cerakote. And next thing I know, I was shooting for a couple companies, and it's just been awesome. It's been a ride since then, about 6 years now after that. And it's just been awesome. Now I shoot quite a bit, go to SHOT Show, NRA Show, a couple other trade shows, help do training events for the new rep groups in Florida and some other stuff. And if nothing else, I've learned more about the industry. I've learned more about guns than I ever thought I would know. And I used to think I knew a lot.
Right.
And now I'm like, yeah, I didn't know anything. You know, it's that usual habit of, you know, as you start a job, like, I know everything. I didn't know anything.
Now, would you go for the, you know, for these companies, you go to some of these trade shows and stuff, are there, you know, certain publicity things you have to do with, you know, picture taking and handshaking and autographs and that sort of thing?
Thankfully, I mean, not that I would mind that, but thankfully, no, it was funny. It was the, as Jeremy from IWI likes to tell me is, if I needed you to be under a contract, that probably says there's a problem. And he's like, you know, he'd always tell me, you know, if I need a contract, you and I probably have a problem and I'm worried about what you're doing.
Right.
And so most of these companies are like, listen, you show up and you, you help us out.
Nice.
And I've kind of been invited back and back and back. And every year I always ask them, you know, you sure you still want to sponsor me? And they go, why are you even asking? I said, hey man, I'm going to ask every time.
Make sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been a great road. And you know, it's, I love doing the interviews. I, at Hollow Sun, I got, I kind of do a lot of the interviews now at SHOT Show, NRA Show, and I love it. And I can meet a lot of cool people like Hank and all them that, a year before that I'd seen them on YouTube and thought, man, how do you meet celebrities like Hank Strange and like this guy? And right. And then you meet him and people are like, oh my gosh, you know Hank Strange. I'm like, yeah, I'm like, I got Lola's phone. You know, I talked to Lola. You know,
all right. Right. It, you know, it, it outside looking in, and a lot of people, that's why I warn there are people that are, that do this, that do the, whatever the whole firearm or the creator thing, whatever you want to call it, that they've been put on a pedestal. Make no mistake, it's the people out there watching and listening that put them on that pedestal, and they feel they deserve that pedestal, and they look down upon people from that pedestal. But the dirty little secret is that everybody at SHOT Show, the creators, the quote unquote celebrities or whatever it might be, are just for the most part regular guys, man. It's just, it's, that's what's cool about it all.
No, I 100% agree. And we always joke, you know, it's usually the people we invite back are the ones that we know. You know, I will schedule some of our like interviews, and we have a lot of people back, and sometimes they're the newest person, sometimes they're the person that has, you know, 500,000 viewers.
Right.
But you get to know them, and you know the ones A, that are trustworthy, B, that don't act like a jerk, you know, because we've had some that they come in and their whole spiel is, you know, I'm a jerk up until I got on camera, and then I'm this great guy.
Right.
I don't want to talk to you because I just saw you treat this person like garbage. Like, I don't want to talk to you. Right. You know, right. Let's do a quick interview and get you out of our booth so that nobody thinks you're with us.
Yep.
So it's funny. I agree with you, though. I mean, a lot of us put people on pedestals, and you know, it's like politicians or anything else. You know, we think about people, and we like, I like that guy or that gal, and then we put them on this pedestal. And the reality is, in real life, they can never live up to what you put them on. They can't. I mean, you know, even if they tried their best, they couldn't do it.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I mean, there have been, I should say, a few times in my life that I've been starstruck a little bit. I can say that a YouTuber has never been one of those cases. you know, usually you're talking about, you know, some type of a heroic figure, right? Somebody did something really important in history, or, you know, achieved some level of greatness, right? As far as actors and singers and YouTubers and, you know, that sort of thing, not so much. And that was one of the things. It was kind of funny. First time I met Hank, since you were talking about that, was NRA. Several years ago, and Lola was in line at the media room going in to get the passes, and I walked up, and he was at the end of the line, and I just walked up and I said, hey Hank, and, you know, kind of reached out for a fist bump, you know, and it's like, you know, he didn't know who I was.
Yep.
You know, but it was like, I wasn't gonna, oh my God, it's Hank, or, you know, anything like that. It's like, you know what? It's just Hank. What's up, Hank? You know?
Yeah.
And pretty much, we got to talking, and he's like, oh yeah, I've seen you in the chats out there, you know, occasionally. I'm like, yeah, that's me. And he's like, oh, okay. And, you know, sort of, you know, I don't want to say not besties or anything like that, but, you know, been acquaintances ever since. Good acquaintances ever since.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. You met the best, you meet the best people and the weirdest people in the gun industry.
I can guarantee you there's some weird ones. I can promise you. Now, with the competitions, which style matches or disciplines do you typically shoot?
So really my two favorites over time have switched from, I used to love the pistol competitions where it was just pistol, nothing else, but I'm a rifle guy. I love shooting rifle. And so I got into three gun when that came into Ohio, probably 5 years ago, maybe 6 years ago. And so I love shooting rifle. And then, the new thing, I say new in the grand perspective of things, but pistol caliber carbine, which is pistol caliber rifles, that's kind of been one of the things that I have grown to absolutely love. Primarily because rifle guns are fun to shoot, but pistol is cheaper. So now you can combine the cheapness of a pistol with the awesomeness of a rifle. And people make fun of you for shooting PCC, but I love it just because it's something I can teach my kids too. Pistol's hard to learn, and it's hard to have a kid shoot because they're just smaller in stature. But you give them a pistol caliber carbine that maybe has a brace on it, so you have a short barrel, and they can rock that all day long in a 9mm. And you know, and most of them love it because you can do all kinds of cool stuff and they get a good grip on it. And you got an optic on it, which, you know, I've yet to see a kid who goes, I want to shoot irons. You know, they're like, give me the red dot on there or the green or whatever. And let me rock and roll here.
I don't know. I see some that it's a tactical play for the kids that do it, because I think you're right. I think most go for the optic because it's cool. But there's a little less competition in the irons. So if you're pretty decent with irons, then you can bring home some hardware a lot of times because you're competition. So
I know my
youngest daughter, she was more so into the archery thing, right? Growing up, and actually won state her senior year. But she opted for the recurve. Right.
Oh, wow.
The Olympic style recurves. Now, she had a compound bow and all of that good stuff. But why? She liked the challenge, the level of difficulty challenge, first of all. Second of all, she liked having something that fewer other people had in an Olympic class recurve. And third, she liked less competition in that particular class in matches, you know. She would shoot a lot of times. She would be against maybe a dozen competitors instead of 100, you know? And so that was a big deal to her.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's always, you know, people would probably classify me semi-similar to that because I've shot bullpups, and everyone's like, why on earth would you shoot a bullpup in AR-15's world? But one, it's something cooler and it's different. And I like cool and different. And B, I've never been to a shooting range, whether it's private or public, and not had someone come up and go, what is that? And like, let me shoot it. And so, you know, I'm like, absolutely. You know, I've blown through more ammo than I would ever want to count from having people walk up and me just going, yeah, man, shoot it. You know, here's a mag, here's two mags, whatever, have fun with it. And, you know, they've always loved it. And IWI is a great company with that. And then call us on optics. They're optics that most people are like, oh, it's like a spaceship, you know? And it's like, yeah, you know, it's like a space gun with a spaceship optic. So.
Right.
A little bit of a good match there.
So that's a pretty good segue. Let's shift in. Let's talk a little bit about some of the gear and equipment and stuff like that that you run, if you don't mind. That'll help give us an opportunity to give a shout out, of course, to some of those that help you out. Plus, maybe give some people out there maybe looking to up that game in competition or get into it, give them an idea of maybe what they want to run.
Yeah. So where I started with, this is the kind of Gen 2 of it. And, I'm always nervous when we do these because I've never, you know, this is not a live one, so we can show guns on it.
Right.
I took all the optics off the guns because I thought I couldn't have guns on. This is just a magnifier from Hollow Sun, but this is my X95 that I run, and so this is a bullpup gun. Charging handles on this side, and it's got a Cerakote from Victor's Legacy. They don't look like this normally, But I love this. This has been a great gun for me. I've shot a lot of it. And what it does allow is, especially if you're going to shoot in a car, which some matches do have you shooting through a car or inside of a car as you start, or a van. This has been great because I can do whatever I want with this thing because of the size of it. Mm-hmm. So I really like it. Also, you can put a suppressor on here, and it's still not even the length of an AR-15, which is really cool. So you can use their home defense and multiple things. Mm-hmm. In terms of ARs, though, IWI recently came out with their AR-15, which is this guy, and this is the Zion. And really, when you get into competition, I always tell people, you get in where your price point is good for you, because most of the things on AR, like, you know, can be adjusted very easily. It doesn't take a lot to go up and down after you have the receiver set. Mm-hmm. And so this is a great one. The big thing I always tell people that you kind of want for most people is just a good rail that allows you to have free floated barrel, obviously, which just means the barrel doesn't touch any of the handguard, and then a decent stock that you're comfortable with. And this is one of the B5s that comes on the IWI Zion. Just make sure it's comfortable for you, and people have different tastes for that. And, you know, I always tell them, find what's comfortable for you. You know, it's like a car. Mm-hmm. Car might feel great to me, but it doesn't feel great to you. I wouldn't buy it for you.
Right.
And then for three gun, a lot of times we're reaching out to 500 and 600 yards now. So I use a 1x8 optic from Primary Arms, their ACSS. They're great people over there. So I run their ACSS optic for that, for those longer shots. When it comes to
reticle too.
Yeah, it really is. I like it because, A, you can not only shoot competition with it, you can go hunting with it. And the nice thing with competition, which people say it's a game, it is a game. I will never second guess someone that it is a game. You know the distance your targets are at usually because someone always has it written down because they've already thought about it. And they'll share it. Most competitors are pretty cool people. And they'll say, oh, yeah, that's 250, 350, 495. You know that. Occasionally, maybe someone doesn't know because you're the first person on the stage and no one says it and they don't have the rangefinder. With these optics, you can kind of like mini range find it yourself and kind of know the distance you're at, which is nice. And it's minimalistic. I kind of like the horseshoe with the chevron in it because for close range shooting, you know, from 0 to 15-20 yards, it's very fast just to use that horseshoe to shoot at. But you can get into it for whatever you want. The Zion's a cheap, relatively inexpensive option to get into with a lot of high quality parts. And I always feel, you know, get in at your price point, because if you don't like something, you don't want to have blown, you know, your whole wad on it and then go, well, now I can't buy my shotgun or my whatever.
Right.
For my pistol, I use a STI 2011. And I also use a this is actually the Masada from IWI. I run this as well. So especially if you're more standard level competitions, I like shooting this because this is what I conceal carry every day. And so for me, I want to be really good at what I conceal carry with. And I'm not conceal carrying a 2011. So I want to make sure I'm good with what I carry. And these are just the, as we talked about earlier, these are the Taylor Freelance makes mag extensions for a lot of guns, ARs and stuff like that. And it gives you +5 extra rounds. And in competition, one round can make the difference. 5 definitely is going to make a difference.
Right.
And this one has an optic on top. Of course, took the optic off because, you know, I'm always thinking, can't show guns.
Right.
Because I got scolded with.
Now, the optics, that one, you run a hollow sun on that, I'm guessing?
Yeah, so actually, Hank will kill me after this gets posted, because originally we were going to talk about it in his podcast, but this one actually has our 509, the Holosun 509 on it.
Okay.
And this is our first fully enclosed pistol sight. We actually brought this to market, or actually did a SHOT Show a couple of years ago, and we just didn't take it all the way fully to market, and now we are. And this one actually sits, as funny as it sounds, you put a Picatinny mount on top of your gun, so it attaches via a RMR mounting plate, and so you kind of put a mini Picatinny mount onto your pistol, and the optic goes onto that Picatinny mount. It does sit a little bit higher, but there are going to be plates that make it sit a little bit lower, so that'd be a good option. I really like this because we do a lot of stuff with military and law enforcement. And this is an optic that alleviates some of their concerns. The concerns being, what if dust or fuzz or dirt, sweat, something like that gets inside? Because more of this traditional optic you're going to see is like this for a pistol, where the back's opened up. I've yet to have anything really get back there that's occluded what the optic looks like, the reticle. Mm-hmm. But this does solve that because it's sealed from both sides.
Right.
And this is actually about to hit the market pretty soon, our 509. And like most of our stuff, it's got three reticles. So you've got a dot, a circle, and a circle with the dot in the middle of it. I like the circle dot because it's it gives me more to find, you know, especially when I'm shooting with a red dot on my pistol. These are also, you're probably going to see these on PCCs and stuff like that as well. And probably even rifles. A lot of guys like to run these little mini dots for truck guns and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So you can run stuff like that. And I run those especially for PCC, like I was mentioning. And these are kind of big brothers. These are, again, more like a rifle style optic. So this guy right here being, you know, you shrink this 512 down and you get this 509.
Right.
You know, same type of deal. And then this is our 510, which kind of what we're known for around the world is kind of our 510, which was kind of like the space optic. Because at the time, this was kind of like, who makes this crazy optic? It looks like a space gun. Mm-hmm. And this was kind of the mini version that went on a pistol. Right. So, you know, these kind of went hand in hand together. The other thing that we're really known for at Hollow Sun is our solar panels. And those are on top of pretty much all these. I mean, I know it's kind of hard to see, but that right there is a solar panel and that right there is a solar panel. And for me, what I liked about that is not only do you, if your batteries die, do you have something, but I'm more of a preparedness guy as well. I mean, I grew up on a farm. We were always told, you know, have food available, have plans if something goes bad, whether it's a fire, tornado, whatever. And for me, you know, knowing that if my batteries die, I still have that makes me feel really good. Cause I don't know how many times I've seen people shooting and they just go, oh, and they're like, oh no, my battery died. Or they had a bad battery or, you know, whatever. So it's nice having that solar backup on those things, which I really enjoy. We do other optics as well, obviously, as you know. You know, we have our traditional, more traditional style sight. This being our R series, so it's got the dial on the side that kind of changes everything for you with the traditional mounts kind of from us. And then we've got stuff. The other one that's kind of a first look here that your viewers will see is this guy. So this is a super little mini guy. This is what we call our K model. And this is actually for like your P365 XLs, your Hellcats, Glock 43s, things like that. And the cool thing with this, it's going to be hard to see, but the rear of this actually acts as a rear sight. You can kind of see that.
Oh, okay. So, I'm familiar with that concept.
Yeah, so it kind of helps it act as a rear sight, plus it acts as a, obviously, as a reticle as well, because you have a red dot in there. And so we kind of use a lot of these. This one, that small one being, for those that don't know, competitions have what they call bug guns, which is a backup gun. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of your Glock 43s, your 365 XLs, your Hellcats. I know there's more of them, but those are kind of those guns. And that's what that would be for. And at least from my perspective, I look at a red dot or a scope as a combat multiplier. I've rarely seen someone who can shoot faster and more accurate with irons than they can with a dot or a scope. Mm-hmm. Especially when you start reaching out to 300, 400, 500, 600 yards. It's doable. Yes. Mm-hmm. Marines do all the time. But can I do it faster with the scope? Absolutely. You know, all right, let me go to 8 power, pop, 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 done. Let me move on. So those are some of the things that we use. I always advise people, the best thing you do to get into competition, thing I always advise, find a local range, find someone that hosts one and go watch one. And people will let you borrow their gear. They'll let you shoot their gear. They will do anything they can to help you experience that. The shooting community is one of the most generous communities I've ever been part of. And, I would love to get the new generation into it. You know, when you start talking about 12 to 18 year olds and 20 year olds, that's that next segment that has to come in to offset the ones that are going out. And, you know, just like anything else, you don't want to see your hobby die because there's no new blood going in.
Mm-hmm. Now, aside from the firearms and the kind of the optics side of things, the other gear, the stuff that, you know, we don't talk about, you know, bags, mats, slings, ear pro, eye pro. Is there anything that you find is best
in those? Yeah, ironically, the glasses I like the most, they don't even make anymore. I was going to start kind of head to toe with those. Tifosi actually made glasses that you could interchange the little handles that go inside your ears, mm-hmm. and they were phenomenal. I think they stopped making them. I don't know why, because they were like the best thing on earth. I had to go find a pair.
Because you liked them. That's usually right. The reason that I come up with.
Right. Like, it's like the show, you know, show Firefly. For those who know Firefly. Yeah. It's like the show ever. We're canceling it. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, hey, everybody likes it. Let's quit doing that.
Right. You know, let's make it a historical item now. So to Tifosi, I like those. Otherwise, you know, most of us just find glasses that have an orange or an amber and a white tint. And then usually sunglasses as well. You know, you kind of mix and match for what the daylight shows. Mm-hmm. Because for those that don't know, when you shoot competition, you start and you shoot different stages throughout the day. When you start, it might be at dawn. And when you go, it might be at dusk. And so you've got to be ready to shoot in super bright light, middle of daylight, and almost no light. So we do that. For ear protection, one of my buddies introduced me to the new Howard lights. I think they've done a better job recently with some, I think they're called Noise Defender, their little gel inserts. They helped a ton. I think they're worth it. Slings, me personally, there's a company in Ohio called Savvy Sniper Slings, and I run those. I really like them. They have a real nice adjustable sling, and they work with IWI, which is how I got introduced to them, and they make really nice stuff. Moving down, holsters. I use A&R design holsters for most things, mag pouches and things like that. They've been a huge proponent of the 2A community and helped out anywhere from, I mean, I call them sniper challenges, but your long range challenges to your youth events and things like that, which when people do that, it makes me realize they're in it for the long haul. They're not just in it to make a bunch of cash real quick and then get out of the industry, which I like. And then for belts, I've used anything from Weber tactical belts to, there's a company called, I think it's Black Scorpion. They make a really cheap Velcro belt, which I like. Those work really well. Pants, you can kind of choose whatever you want. Everyone knows 5'11". That's, you know, them and TruSpec are kind of, everybody knows those two names in the industry. And then for shoes, a lot of us use either, I think they're called Boombas, or I'm trying to think of what the other ones are called. They're real big name. I lost their name, but there's a couple of different ones that you can run for that. You know, of course, now that I'm trying to think about it, I can see it, and it's probably over on my door over there. Right. Run those kind of things. And then those are really the big things for what you'd have to get into. And you can get into it cheap. I mean, I've seen guys who bring my first event, I brought a pump shotgun that I think I spent $200 on. I brought my Tavor, which is probably the most expensive thing I own. And I brought it was some cheapo 9mm double stack that, you know, just whatever I could afford, because my wife and I were, you know, that's what we could afford at the time. And now I've run all kinds of different things. I have a lot of ability to run things for different people, and just been kind of blessed to experience it all with people.
Mm-hmm. So with, you know, kind of shifted, I guess, off of the equipment. I mean, one thing, if people are out there and kind of thinking about getting into the shooting sports side and all that, as far as, how do I want to ask this or word this? As far as a skill that needs to be practiced, or, you know, something that you need to work on your discipline on, that sort of thing. What kind of those tips could you give somebody?
Yeah, the first thing I tell everybody is work on cardio. I think that was rule number one for Zombieland: cardio, cardio, cardio.
Right.
Because you know, the one thing we actually just shot a competition last weekend on Sunday, and one of the things we told the guy is, he's like, man, he goes, when I go to the range, I shoot my pistol and I don't miss nothing. And I'm ROing him, a range officer behind him, and his gun's going like this, you know, as he's shooting. Right. He's shooting left, right, up, down, you know. And he goes, I don't know what's going on. I said, dude, if I videoed you, you would not believe how fast your gun was shaking. And it's just, you know, your heart rate gets pumping. You start getting nervous. You miss a shot. You're like, oh my gosh, I missed a shot. And everything just kind of falls apart from there. And so it's cardio, cardio, cardio. The next thing is dry fire and practice doing that. When I do get to go to the range, again, with my two kids and my wife, you know, it's not as much as I'd like to anymore. But when I do go to the range, I go with a plan. So I pack 100 rounds or 200 rounds, and I say, okay, I'm going to do this drill, this drill, this drill, and this drill. I'm going to work on this until I get, you know, whatever time, and I do that. Another good thing to do is something that would time your shots, like a shot timer. That you can get them for your phone, which are kind of, they're iffy, but you can also do other things with them. And that's always a bonus. But what I always tell everybody is the best thing you can do besides those things, let's say you've already done a couple of those things, or you're at least safe with a rifle and a pistol and shotgun, is just go and try one. They're usually like $20 to $25 to shoot in a match. And they'll always have a new shooter's brief where they'll say, hey, raise your hand if you've never shot before or shot a competition before. They'll have somebody who's experienced walk you through the whole thing. They'll usually pair you with somebody for the whole match. They'll kind of help you, give you tips, things like that. And I have more fun doing that than I do shooting the match half the time. I'm usually a range officer, and I run people through stages and stuff, but I still try to give out tips. Josh Tarrant, who's a guy who's down the road from me, he's a good shooter. He still gives me tips all the time where he's like, hey, you could have done this and saved 10 seconds. You could have done this and saved 2 seconds. You could have done. And so we learn from each other, just like when you're your normal day job, you know, we learn from each other by doing and experiencing and by listening. And so I always recommend people do that. And shooting competitions are one of those easy things that you can bring, you know, you can go to a USPSA match, bring 200 rounds of pistol ammo and shoot your first match.
Right.
And you kind of learn a lot from there. You know, just go in expecting to have fun. That's all you got to do. You know, take your time and have fun.
No, I would totally agree with that. Anybody thinking about getting into and quite honestly, whatever the shooting sport, whatever the match is, we were talking about some cowboy action earlier. You know, we talked about even some archery, if it's still challenge, if it's some of the precision stuff, get your basic safety gear, get your, your basic equipment, firearms, stuff you need, pay your fee and go do it, because there's going to be people there that are going to help you. And for most people, there are some serious people out there.
Right.
I know you compete on such a level. I never really have, but I know you could. Well, I say that when you get into this, to the state level, it gets sometimes, but you do got some people that take it too serious, but for the most part, everybody's really just having fun, you know?
Yeah.
At least up until the point that the timer goes off, or, you know, they get the command to fire anyway.
Right.
At that time they tend to get serious, but you know, it's all fun and games up until that point. And I think that, that people out there would enjoy it. I mean, even if you don't place, even if you, you know, you come in dead last, I mean, what, you know, $25, you know, some of these matches and stuff like that for a day of fun on the range, pulling triggers. Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. There's worse ways to spend a day. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And there's, and the great thing is, if you ask most shooters, what would they have done differently? Most time what I've heard from people when I've asked them that question is they wish they wouldn't have spent so much money up front. They wish they would have went to a match, watched, learned, listened, and then bought once and cried once versus, you know, I'm going to buy all this stuff. It's going to be great. You go there and you go, man, none of this stuff works where I thought it would. You know, I thought it would, and it doesn't. And then you got to try to sell it, or you keep it and you buy it again. And the best thing you can do is go find somebody who is willing to loan some gear out or help you shoot, shoot their stuff, see if you like it, and then just kind of keep trying stuff.
And I've seen some of those guys show up at, I say guys, I mean kids, parents, whatever, you know, women show up at matches. And I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it's one of my favorite, one of my favorite movies out there is Tin Cup with Kevin Costner, right?
Yep.
And the one where his girlfriend or whatever first shows up, and she's got all these doodads and gadgets to learn how to golf.
Yep.
You know? And he says, the first thing you need to do is just get rid of all this stuff, right?
Yep. He's like,
just get rid of it. He said, that's the only, they just made that stuff to, for somebody to try to get rich. You know, it's not going to help you. Just get rid of that and just do it, basically.
And it's funny because exactly what you just said, I mean, when you look at the average AR-15 that a guy at competition shoots, except for maybe some fancy colors or something different about it.
Sure.
It is just a barrel, a handguard, and a stock with an optic on top and a compensator. But there's nothing fancy on them. There's not a bunch of things sticking out of them. It's pretty much just an AR-15 with what they like attached to it. And you're not going to see a bunch of fancy things. You're not going to see – I've seen guys, you know, I've got this little rangefinder thing that whips out of here and it points out and tells me my – you're never gonna see, you don't have enough time to even think about that stuff, man. It's just pull it up, shoot, move, shoot, move, shoot.
Right, right. So, Adam, I'm gonna give you here a few minutes. Well, I don't know, maybe not take a few minutes, but a few seconds anyway at the end of the podcast here. Let people know where they can find you, follow you, all if they want to keep up with what you're doing and the matches and the other things. How do they do that?
Yeah, first off, I'm still not sure how the podcast is done. I think we've been talking for what, five, six minutes is about it.
That's what it feels like. It's always right. That way. Yeah.
We just started like 6 minutes ago. So they can find me on Facebook. It's Adam Litke. So LITKE dash competitive shooter. It's my dorky face up there with a bullpup usually. They can find me on Instagram at Adam_SASA. It's not my last name. It's a training company I work with. And then I'm Shield and Sword Academy on YouTube. I haven't posted a lot for a while with COVID and other stuff. It's taken most of my time away. I hope they check that stuff out. I hope they go to a local competition. One thing they can do is if you go to practicescore.com, that's kind of like, it's the Nirvana of gun stuff. You go there, you can type in your location. It'll tell you every single match, every single thing around you. It's a great feature to have. I hope they get out there and try it. If they're in Ohio, definitely hit me up. I'll take you out there. I'll let you borrow guns, gear, whatever you need, and try your shooting. You know, if you're looking for, you know, red dots, things like that, try Hollow Sun. If you need a scope, primary arms, ARs, you know, I like my IWI Zion, you know, definitely check that out. And I just hope they get out there and they try stuff. And that's, That's my goal, is if somehow I could bring 200 new shooters in a year, that would be my goal. It's not to take home a new gun. It's not to take home $1,000. I really want to have, you know, for every one person that leaves the shooting community, 10 are coming in. And that way, at some point, you know, when you go to work, the normal conversation is like, man, did you see that new Smith & Wesson or Glock or IBI or whatever?
There you go.
Right, that's just a normal conversation. Man, that's crazy. On the news last night, I saw this new thing that's awesome. And not people going, man, I don't know if I can talk about that here. People are going to think I'm a Unabomber or something. Mm-hmm. So I hope it's stuff like that. And obviously support, you know, local. If, you know, if you have local companies in your state and they're big proponents, always support them. You know, it's when the big companies don't sell our stuff anymore or they're not allowed to, your mom and pop shop down the road is going to be the only one you have access to. And, you know, they're the ones that are supporting your baseball teams and things like that. And we can't do enough to support them, especially right now with COVID, when a lot of those places are really having a tough time. Mm-hmm. So I highly advise always checking them out.
Right. Well, Adam, I appreciate you joining us this week, and it's been a pleasure. Welcome back on anytime, and have a good weekend, man.
All right, man. Thank you, too.
Thank you for joining in on another Firearm Friday. Don't forget to log on to clovertech.com. There you'll find our social media links, the blog, cool swag, and more. If you'd like to help support our projects and take advantage of some extra perks, you can do so over on Patreon at patreon.com/clovertech. Have a great weekend.